This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Listen now to a talk Magnus Ohman had with Dr. John Eckelblum, Associate Professor in the Department of Medicine at McMaster's University in Hamilton, Canada, and Dr. Deepak Bhatt, Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. They cover cardiovascular outcomes for people using anticoagulant strategies, COMPASS trial primary results.
Welcome both to AXL.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So Deepak, maybe I should start to you because this is a trial of secondary prevention among patients with vascular disease. And this is not a group of patients we have studied a whole lot over the years. So give us a little bit of perspective, the importance of this group of patients and prevention.
Absolutely. That's a great question. And for sure, this is a population that's been understudied, exactly how to advance the care of patients with stable coronary disease and stable peripheral artery disease. And COMPASS had both flavors of patients and, of course, some that had overlap, as is true in real life. Actually, as you well know from the work we've done together in the REACH registry, a fair number of those patients with so-called polyvascular disease. In fact, the term was coined from the REACH registry. So it is, I think, a wonderful opportunity in COMPASS not only to study specific drug regimens that John will go through, I'm sure, but just to understand more about the fact that there are patients with coronary disease that have PAD and vice versa, and some cerebrovascular disease.
Remind us again, how many patients actually had what we would call polyvascular disease, because I'm sure this will come up later in REACH. It was a sizable proportion, right?
Yes, there's a sizable proportion. So the majority of patients with cerebrovascular disease or peripheral artery disease had disease in at least one other arterial territory, and over a quarter of those with coronary artery disease had symptomatic atherothrombosis in another territory. And I emphasize that symptomatic, that is, we weren't just looking for asymptomatic disease. If we were, then that degree of overlap would be even larger.
What's your best estimation of a standard U.S. practice of patients coming in that have this sort of combination of things?
You know, that's tricky because there is an unfortunate vast underdiagnosis of peripheral artery disease. You know, late Alan Hirsch had done some good work on this. Of course, you and I worked with him on REACH, but in a separate study, the partner study looked at PAD and asymptomatic PAD, used ankle brachial index and so forth. And there's a ton of PAD out there, but it's often just not diagnosed. So to answer your question, though, I'd say probably a quarter, a third of patients have some overlap.
That's a very large population, particularly in the U.S. and worldwide, and they have a high event rate. So you set out, John, to sort of try to improve these people's outcomes. So tell us what you did.
Yes, indeed. So in the COMPASS trial, we really built on what we'd learned from the early studies in ATLAS, the dose finding with rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams twice daily and rivaroxaban 5 milligrams twice daily. So we tested two rivaroxaban regimens, the 2.5 twice daily in combination with aspirin, and the 5 milligram twice daily alone, and the control was aspirin alone.
Which is great. Aspirin is the standard of therapy for all these patients, and they pretty much, most of them, or all of them, receive it. So you randomize into three groups. How long were you studying the patients for?
Well, we had hoped to study them for about 3 to 4 years. It was an event-driven trial as designed, and we wanted to continue till we had 2,200 subjects with a primary outcome event. But the Data Safety Monitoring Board thought otherwise, and in their review of the data at a formal interim analysis, discovered that for one of the comparisons, we'd crossed the threshold for stopping.
So they stopped the trial, and we might as well turn straight to the primary endpoint, which was?
Well, the primary endpoint was a composite cardiovascular death, stroke, or myocardial infarction. And the winning combination, so to speak, was the combination of aspirin and rivaroxaban. And on the primary outcome, there was a 24% risk reduction, which, as you can imagine, was wildly significant because the stopping boundaries are so extreme. You don't want to stop prematurely. These arms want to be sure that you've got a clear result.
And that's the same amount of relative benefit that we saw in the ICES-2 trial with aspirin alone in ST elevation myocardial infarction. So it's pretty amazing. So this is on top of aspirin already compared to the aspirin group. Tell us just a little bit about the 5 milligram twice day dose. So it's half rivaroxaban if you want to talk about AFib for a second.
Yes, indeed. In fact, we're calling them vascular protective doses to distinguish them from the, let's say, the anticoagulant doses. But the 5 milligram twice daily provided no benefit over aspirin alone. I mean, a modest, very small treatment effect, not statistically significant. So that's not going anywhere.
Interesting. So, Deepak, does this surprise you a little bit? 2.5, fairly sizable effect, 5 milligrams twice daily, not so much.
I'm glad you asked the question because I think many of our listeners will find that counterintuitive, but it didn't surprise me. Just to be clear, you know, the 5 milligram BID in this study was monotherapy. So it's a very clever design by John and his colleagues at McMaster, looking not just at this question of aspirin alone versus aspirin plus 2.5 twice a day of rivaroxaban, that was the winning dose from Atlas, but also just looking at anticoagulant alone. 5 BID, still not the AFib dose, kind of a medium dose, to see if that might beat aspirin. It was a bold step, and it turned out it didn't beat aspirin. However, the combo of aspirin and very low dose for rivaroxaban surely did.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. And so you had a large cohort. How many patients did you say?
27,395. And I should add, the U.S. made a major contribution, about 1,500 subjects. And Deepak was one of the leaders, although he credits McMaster with aspects of the trial. But this was truly an international collaboration and very strongly led from the U.S. with our colleagues.
So the results will be applicable to our country. The difference between, of course, the U.S. and the rest of the world, we do not have the 2.5 milligram twice daily dose the rest of the world does. Obviously, anytime you add a little bit of anticoagulation to the therapies, you're going to see some bleeding. Tell us a little bit about the bleeding outcomes.
Absolutely. And as you suggest, there was a clear increase in bleeding. The hazard ratio was 1.7, so a 70% increase. As soon as we see this, we obviously want to know what sorts of bleeds occurred. The good news is that there was no increase in fatal or intracranial bleeding. So the most severe bleeds, the ones we really worry about, weren't increased. There also is one other aspect here to try and integrate the information on efficacy and safety. And we pre-specified a net clinical benefit outcome, which combined the primary efficacy outcome with the most severe bleeding complications. And that showed a clear net benefit. And then the ultimate test of net benefit, which is all-cause mortality, was 18% lower in the combination arm compared with aspirin.
These are very impressive data. And remember, this is in chronic prevention on top of aspirin that has some effect in secondary prevention. So, Deepak, where does this lead us to next? What do you do next here?
I think that's a terrific question. The data are very strong, for sure. The issue is how to integrate into practice. So there's some practical issues. The 2.5 BID dose for rivaroxaban is not FDA approved. It's not available in the U.S., as you alluded to earlier. And as far as I can tell, there's no way to recreate it with a pill cutter or anything. So it just can't be used right now. And then assuming it gets approval from the FDA, and I'm hopeful that it does. In fact, I thought it deserved it for the acute coronary syndrome indication based on Atlas II, but it wasn't granted that. But assuming it's available, then I think we'll have a terrific option with a very favorable net clinical benefit for a broad range of patients, stable CAD and stable PAD, that's a lot of patients. So I think in terms of where to start, PAD might be a more seamless sort of area to start using it. There's clopidogrel, of course, that's FDA approved there, that has good efficacy versus aspirin based on CAPRI. But with this trial now, COMPASS, we've got mortality benefit overall in the trial. So, you know, that does raise the stakes a bit. So I think PAD is a natural place, but I also think in high-risk stable CAD, it should have a role. The real thing that I think will be a challenge is integrating it with dual antiplatelet therapy. That is, if somebody's already on dual antiplatelet therapy, they wouldn't have been enrolled in COMPASS.
Yeah, and as you bring this up, I presume that many of these patients was quite far away from their ACS or acute coronary syndrome event. What was the number roughly?
In the coronary artery disease cohort, about two-thirds of people in the overall trial, let's say, had myocardial infarction, but they were about 7 years on average post-myocardial infarction.
So we call them ultra-stable. And that's good because that's a very simple thinking about it. That's your really stable coronary disease patient.
Well, just to take you up on that, so we may say ultra-stable, but if we look at the treatment effect with the combination versus aspirin, within 3 months, the curves are very evidently separating. And that, I'm a little puzzled. I'm delighted. I'm impressed, but a little puzzled. These are stable patients, but the treatment effect is really immediate.
They're stable patients who could do better. It's the bottom line. So tell us about the peripheral vascular disease cohort, because as Deepak brings up, this is a very important group. These are patients we see, and they have traditionally have had very high events, not only of cardiac events, but also stroke events.
Precisely, there were about 27% of participants with a history of peripheral artery disease, and they had the same benefits in terms of reduction in the primary outcome, the MACE outcome, but they also, importantly, had a reduction in acute limb events, acute limb ischemia and amputation. And when I think of the most severe things that happen to people with vascular disease, it's probably the disabling stroke and it's the amputation of the leg and dying in COMPASS. The combination reduced all three of those events.
And important here, these patients did not have atrial fibrillation, yet the ischemic stroke reduction was fairly profound.
Yes, 42% reduction in stroke. When we look back at Deepak, I went back to some of your trials. I mean, you were involved in CAPRI and you led CHARISMA and you took a major leadership role in Pegasus. And in all those trials, the stroke reduction was somewhat disproportionately large. I mean, I think it's not a fluke. There's a real theme emerging here that stroke is modifiable with better antithrombotic therapy.
Absolutely agree with that.
And I think this is a good way to end on, as we have reduced limb events, we have reduced stroke, we have all-cause mortality reduction. So it's a very powerful message for secondary prevention, which is a long-term therapy. So congratulations, John, and congratulations, Deepak, for actually providing such important data to us all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.